are listening to Wells Tech, episode 643, recorded on Tuesday, December 1st, 2020. Mind Candy. Wells Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Today on the show, we continue our review of the book Atomic Habits by James Clear and his third law, Make It Easy, all about practicing good habits and getting rid of bad ones. Lots of practical knowledge for our stewardship lives. We have some great picks of the week. I talk about maybe a new laptop that might be worth considering if you are in the market. A great ministry resource for you that are teaching art, some wonderful community feedback, and a hymnal, new hymnal preview resource that you will not want to miss. All that and more. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 643, and we're recording it on December 1st, 2020. Wells Tech is a little show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. And we chat about a lot of different topics, but helping me do that each and every week, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally.
Hi, Martin. Happy to be joining you again. Happy to come off of a nice Thanksgiving break. It feels refreshing to be back at work, and I'm eager to dive into the book discussion today.
I am too. For those of you that have maybe not stayed overly current with Wells Tech, which is fine, we love people dipping in and out. If you know, join us when you can. We do pick a book usually each year that is relevant to some kind of aspect of ministry or technology or both. This one happens to be one on productivity and specifically about developing and keeping good habits and getting rid of bad habits. It's called Atomic Habits. And it's by an author, James Clear. It was on the bestseller list, I think, for a while. It is actually a nice short book. You can cover a bunch of chapters, and we've taken about three or four chapters at a time. We're nearing the end, and the book is kind of divided up into laws. And we're up to the third law, which I like the title, Make It Easy. It makes it sound like we can do this thing.
Right. I was just looking up what the other two laws were we've covered. The first was make it obvious, and the second, make it attractive. And so it's obvious what we need to be doing. It looks good to do it. Now we got to make it easy. And there were four chapters in this section that basically covered some ways to reduce, well, they call it reducing friction, to make it less steps, to capitalize on, you know, the moment when you need to do the habit, you know, that kind of thing, so that you're not even hardly thinking about it. You kind of shift into automatic.
Get that friction out of the system. Remove as much as you can between where you want to go and the things you have to do to get there. And those things are these little habits that you stack on top of each other, these atomic habits that, when you're all said and done, they get you to a good place. So you want to go chapter by chapter, just kind of a highlight from each one. We don't need to go into a lot of depth, but I think it would be helpful maybe to give our impressions of things we read.
Yeah, definitely. Chapter 11 is titled Walk Slowly But Never Backward. And one of the things that I got out of it is that habits improve over time as you do them often. And it reminded me, I think it was, oh, I'm losing his name now, the guy that writes really cool books, Malcolm Gladwell, who talked about 10,000 reps, the violinist and things like that, that practice things 10,000 times. And that was kind of the same thing I took away from chapter 11. The more reps you put in, the habits are formed with frequency. It doesn't mean it's going to take a long time. If you do a lot of reps in a short period of time, you can begin to form habits. So just putting in the practice is basically what I got.
Right. I got that too. So it's not necessarily a time-based thing, but it's a frequency thing. And that makes a lot of sense. The more times you do something, obviously, the more ingrained it gets. There was a reference there to taxi drivers. There was a study done on brain development and how those that obviously knew the city, there was an increase in retention, obviously. But the minute they stopped being a taxi driver, they retired, that brain development dropped, at least in these certain areas, which makes a lot of sense. So frequency is an important thing.
Yeah, definitely. A neat quote that I grabbed from there, "The best is the enemy of the good." I have a place where I write some of my favorite quotes, and that one is from Voltaire,
right.
And I thought that was encouraging. We don't have to be perfect in our reps, in our habits, whatever it is, but just doing it frequently is going to make the difference.
Mm-hmm. Should we go on to the next chapter? Chapter 12, The Law of Least Effort. What struck you about that one, Sally?
Well, it struck
me. I think I might know.
It struck me that it said Natchez, Mississippi.
That's right.
That would be my hometown, and it was spelled out.
He said
right
it a little different than you, I
white.
Noticed, though. Or at least I do the audiobook and the narrator, and I think it was James himself, said it a little bit different than you normally say
probably
it, which is probably not a surprise to you.
Like Natchez
or something. Natchez,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's exactly. Not right. It's Natchez. So, yeah, he gave an example. I thought it was a great example. It actually came from a Reddit discussion board where a guy basically said he resets each time he does something. So he has a habit of returning things to the place they belong, of loading the dishwasher and running the dishwasher and cleaning the toilet before he gets in the shower. He said, what better time to clean the toilet than when you're going to wash yourself all over? You know, so he has these little habits of consistently doing things. I actually, I think of it as setting the table. I'm preparing, I'm making things ready for the next round, whatever it may be. And for me, I see this most often in my bedtime routine because I always make myself pick up my clothes for the next day. I am terrible at that in the morning. I tend to stand half asleep in front of my closet for a very long time if I have to pick out clothes in the morning. I'm just not that awake. And so that's one of my ways that I reduce friction. It's a habit I've adopted. And every night I pick out my clothes and they're in the bathroom ready for me to get dressed after my shower. And it makes things go really fast in the morning. So I think that's kind of a good way to think of reducing friction, just staying organized, getting things ready for the next time.
Yeah, one thing that I thought of, I have a tea maker at home, and I'd like to take tea to work with me, or to the home office if I'm going upstairs, or into the office. And that tea maker is sitting right next to the cabinet where I have things that I take, medications that I take before bed. And there's an automated timer on that tea maker where you just kind of prep your tea. You put the tea in, the loose tea in, and you put the water in, and you can set the tea maker on automatic. So it goes on at 6 in the morning, and by the time you're ready to go out the door, it's all ready. So that's just one less thing to worry about or one less thing to delay you. So it's an increase in productivity for me. And it's because it's right there before I go to bed, I know I need to take my medications and the tea maker's right there. It's just a reminder. And that kind of goes back to one of the other laws. So make it obvious. And that's just something that reduces that friction. So it's not something that I have to remember or forget to do. It's just organizing the space, and that was kind of one of the things he talked about here, organizing the space for its intended purpose. Just kind of put things in good places, and that helps out a lot.
Yep, very true. Moving on then to Chapter 13, How to Stop Procrastinating by Using the 2-Minute Rule. I was thinking about the 5-second rule on the floor when I read about the 2-minute rule. A little bit different, but basically when you start doing new habits, they should be 2 minutes or less to complete. Keep them really short and simple, and maybe they will then turn into something longer, if you can start your workout habits with just something really short, then over time you can add to that, and you'll be motivated to add to it because you'll see that you can do it and that it's improving, and it just gives you the motivation to kind of pick up steam and make things bigger.
Yeah, he talked about the example of somebody going into the gym for 5 minutes, you know, so a little bit longer than the 2 minute rule, but the same concept. And so somebody went to the gym 5 minutes a day, but did it every day, even though it was a very short period of time. You can't work up too much of a sweat in 5 minutes. But over time, you know, he figured that, well, I'm going to be here for 5 minutes. Why don't I just stay a little bit longer? I'm here already. And then that's the beginning, you know, of the habit. So I thought that was a good example. And you can apply that to a lot of different things. And you can tolerate a lot of things for 2 minutes. And that's mm-hmm. kind of the point. You know, get in the habit of spending those 2 minutes at whatever it is. And then over time, it becomes part of what you do and what you are. And then you can build on that.
Yeah, you said habits are the entry point, not the mm-hmm. end point.
Right, exactly.
It's starting the ball rolling.
It's not about the habit, it's about where you want to go. So, yeah, get going in the right direction. One thing that he did talk about, which resonated with me, he talked about mastering the habit of showing up. And that's kind of this concept of get it going, get it on the schedule, get it to be a part of your routine, even if it's in small bites. And he talked about journaling. I know you and I both journal, you know, in different kinds of ways and maybe different times a day and in different using different tools. But he said, you know, one of the biggest barriers to journaling that he found is to stop before it feels like a chore. So when you are kind of wanting to get into this habit of journaling, maybe it's a line that you write, just one line. So he found a journal where it just had one line you could write in it. And then over time, you get to the point where you feel that, you know, this is a good use of my time, and you get more invested in it. And because you're used to doing it, you're setting aside time, it becomes, you know, a little bit longer and a little bit longer and more beneficial.
And, you know, that is also very true. It's also true that, and maybe this is covered elsewhere, but it's really easy to break a good habit, like something that's mm-hmm. just really ingrained in you that you feel, you know, just normally this is what I do. This is how I do it. I do it every day. And if you miss about 2 or 3 days, then you can get off right. the wagon really quickly too. But I will be honest, journaling for me has been a habit I've adopted. I think I'm coming up on 2+ years of writing Bible verses every day. And I had tried mm-hmm. this in the past, and I used to do the thing where I needed to reflect on it and write some reflection to go with it. And I kind of found that to be more of a chore. I didn't always have it in me to write something philosophical, reflective on it. And
became a chore,
and
right.
So mm-hmm. then I just kind of allowed myself to just write the Bible verses, just copy them down like my copying work for the day in third grade or whatever. And then I did feel inspired on some days to reflect more, to write more about it or whatever. It freed me from it being a chore by keeping it short and simple, basically.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And then God did the rest.
That's right.
Yeah, that's neat. I use an app on my phone called Streaks. It's an iPhone app. I don't think there's an Android version, but there's plenty of these habit tracking apps. But my verse of the day journal is one of the things that I have on this app, where it's a very big button and a very simple app that tracks how many days in a row I've done this. And you can set reminders to whatever frequency you want. And then it gives you just a little nudge, you know, to say, hey, you forgot to record this, or you didn't do this, or do you want to increase the frequency or decrease the frequency? And you have, you know, control over that. But, you know, it's kind of a dumb app in that respect, but just exactly kind of the right encouragement. It's on the home screen of my phone. I see it there. It's called Streaks. And if there's a notification, you get that little badge that says 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever. And you just tap it, open it, and you've got just the reminder that, hey, you wanted to do this, and you haven't told me that you have. So I do that for for running or hiking. Yeah, I've got that in here as well as prayer and a few other things for work. And I've been using it since the beginning of the year, and I found that to be kind of a nice aid to at least just keep me reminded that, hey, these things should be just a part of what you do.
That's pretty cool, Martin. I do not use a habit tracking app, but I actually use the Bible app on my phone and tablet to look up the Bible verses that I'm writing mm-hmm. each day. And it has a built-in streak counter. I didn't notice it for quite a while.
Does it?
But
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it will keep up with. And on my home screen, it says 83 weeks. I've been in the Bible app every day for 83 weeks. And that's really encouraging when you open it up and see that. Just kind of that visual that reminds you. I'm in this, and I'm excited about it. So
yeah, I have to look at that. I use the reading plans now. Mm-hmm. I do off and on, and I'll kind of get hooked once in a while, and that does that reminder thing and the streak thing too, where you can catch up if you miss something.
Cool,
good stuff. It's a good app. Mm-hmm. Want to go to chapter 14?
Sure. Chapter 14: How to Make Good Habits Inevitable and Bad Habits Impossible. So this one kind of helps you to kind of lock into things. Maybe you want to spend a little bit of money on a habit tracking app or whatever it may be, some technology to help you kind of be locked in, binding you to that good habit. And then conversely, things to kind of get in the way of bad habits. So restricting the bad habits, the keeping them out of the way. The author actually, towards the end of the chapter, mentions that he had his assistant lock him out, change the passwords on his social media accounts while he was writing this book, Atomic Habits. So every Monday morning, his assistant would go in and change the passwords. And he literally was locked out of his social media accounts until Friday afternoon. And then she would give him the passwords and he would have access over the weekend. And then she'd lock him out again on Monday morning. And he basically said, you know, it was a great thing for the focus that he needed to write the book. And he really didn't miss it after he got used to it. It wasn't something that was a big craving for him or whatever. He put that physical, you know, barrier between him and his mindless social media scrolling. He actually mm-hmm. called it mental candy, which I thought was kind of funny. And it reminded me, we have kind of a standing joke in our house that my husband is an Elon Musk fan. And so almost every night he's given us Elon Musk updates of something he's doing with SpaceX or Tesla or whatever it may be currently. He's just always talking about Elon, and that's his mental candy. That's what he likes to scroll and read about. For me, I just like to mindlessly scroll Facebook or maybe play a little game on my phone or work a Sudoku puzzle or whatever it is. I have plenty of mental candy that can distract me for very long periods of time. But what was cool, Martin, was I decided to ask James Clear if he was still doing the weekday lockout from his social media accounts and if he had kept that habit up once the book was done and whether he was happy with his decision. And so I thought, well, I can tweet him. Who knows? He might actually answer. And he did answer me on Twitter. So I had this public conversation with my good friend, James Clear, the author of Atomic Habits.
Your new best friend.
That's right. And he said, I don't do it anymore, but it was very helpful while I was working on the book. So his mental candy is back. My husband reminded me that if you have a book you want to promote, it's probably a very good idea to be on social media. So times have changed for him. He's not writing, he's promoting his book, and he's very engaged with social media, apparently, because he responded to my tweet in less than an hour. So pretty cool stuff.
So we're going to see a Tesla in your driveway at some point in the
future?
You
know, as long as it's not one of those dumb Cybertrucks, I'm fine with that. Those Cybertrucks are so ugly, and my husband just taunts me that
he's going to get a
Cybertruck. One of those. Yeah, I hope not.
That's funny. So. Part of this chapter, along that the same lines, he gave the illustration of Victor Hugo, the author, who had all of his clothes removed from his flat, leaving him only with a shawl, which he could not go outside with. So he was forced to live indoors for this period of time until he wrote The Hunchback of Notre Dame. And that's just kind of the same thing. Remove, you know, prepare yourself today for a habit that you, or a behavior and an outcome that you want for tomorrow. So it's an interesting approach.
Serious commitment.
Mm-hmm. So, anything else you want to share about your reading experience this week?
No, I think it kind of validated some things I've tried. I don't know, you know, different things I've tried. I've read things in there that have and haven't worked for me, but I do feel like much of what he's describing is very, very useful information. And it's just maybe I'm really good at circumventing those constrictions and things, commitment devices, as he calls them. So I've done my best, but sometimes I get past things like that.
Yep. We're going to do, I think next time we talk, we're going to go through the rest, finish up the book, I think, right? It would be the last law. So looking forward to that, getting it done here in 2020. Good stuff. Like the book.
Yeah.
Not a lot of theological content, but I think if you apply some of the principles here, just to good stewardship, I think there's great application here. So good stuff. Sally, shall we move along to our picks of the week?
Sure. My pick of the week is an article from one of my favorite blogs. It's from Trello. Trello is a productivity tool that we use in our office and that we've recommended before on the podcast. Allows you to track projects and tasks and things in a really visual way and via the internet, so you can do it collaboratively with others pretty easily. And they write a lot of great things around having productive work processes and things like that. So this article in particular struck me because it's called 5 Quick Team Building Activities to Do Via Conference Calls. It's kind of interesting, Martin, because I've lived and worked virtually since about 2005, actually. So quite a while, quite a bit longer than the rest of the world that's now very much virtual in many ways. But all of a sudden, there's all this emphasis and thought about ways to engage virtually and to build up your team virtually. And I think that's all very positive because it's not the same as having face-to-face contact when you're doing a lot of virtual things. Now, this may not be true, at least currently. Many of our schools are in session for face-to-face, so faculty members are able to see and talk with each other face-to-face. But who knows, we may go into another lockdown period where you are all virtual. Mm-hmm. Even in churches, though, I would think many of our different councils and committees and things are having a virtual aspect to them. I know our church, and we had one of our pastors on recently from Christ the Lord in Brookfield, Pastor Kasmer, talked about how we're doing Zoom Bible classes. So some people are meeting in person, but then they're also live streaming that and trying to engage people who are online in the Bible class as well. So I think a lot of that virtual stuff is happening, maybe not quite so heavily in our churches and schools, but it's around and we're all participating in it. And it's neat to think that it needs a little bit of investment to keep the team afloat and connected and caring about each other in the way that they do when they see each other face to face. So that's kind of what this article is focused on. It says it's not really something that you kind of check off the list or get around to eventually. It really needs to be an investment. It's more effective when it's done regularly and results in a caring and connected team. So they give you some ideas of different things you could play or do. They're not super cheesy or whatever. One of them is to just point your camera out the window and see each other's view that they see out the window and kind of feel and discuss a little bit about what people are seeing outside their window. Another one, desk show and tell, maybe something within your reach that you would take on a desert island or whatever it may be, just kind of something to have a discussion point and connect around. One was two truths and a lie. I don't know if you've ever played that game, but
we
actually did this as an icebreaker in a class I'm taking this semester, and it was really interesting. People were to write down three facts about themselves, But two are to be true and one a lie. And you're supposed to figure out which one isn't true. And just a really neat way to learn a little bit more about people that there were some really surprising facts just within my classroom of things people have done and things like that that you just wouldn't normally talk about in just a run-of-the-mill conversation with a teammate. They talk about having team coffee or lunch together where you just kind of all get your food and sit together in a meeting and have small talk around a meal like you would in real time, or summarizing a story in 60 seconds. So just trying to get people to maybe summarize their career or something they saw on television or whatever, just ways to kind of share a fun story maybe about themselves or about something interesting that they're aware of. So just kind of some basic bonding type activities that might benefit your team and help you get to know each other better. That's my pick.
Excellent.
Of the week.
Yep. I like it. Yeah, that Trello blog is nice. And it's not always about the tool. It's just some of these productivity tips for teams and collaboration. And this is a good one. Mm-hmm. Very timely. We're going to try one of those at our next team meeting,
uh-oh,
Sally.
Beware.
So, two truths and a lie. That sounds like a fun
one. It is pretty fun, actually.
So you've already done the homework for that. So it'll be interesting. With our team, a lot of us have been around together for a long time. So it might be interesting to see how much we know or don't know.
True.
All right, my pick of the week is a hardware pick, and it's actually not a product I own, but I own a similar one. It was time to replace my Mac laptop last month, and I purchased one of the newer MacBook models, a MacBook Pro, but my pick is a MacBook Air. They're kind of very similar this year. And these are based on the brand new chip architecture that Apple just released called the M1. It is basically what is called a system on a chip. So it integrates all the things, you know, to put it in layman's terms, all the things that make your computer go, the brains of the computer. So what processes all the number crunching and the graphics and the ins and the outs, you know, the data reads and the writes and audio and et cetera, all on a tiny little chip. And so they basically, Apple decided to go away from the Intel-based chip. Intel is the biggest chip manufacturer in the world, and make their own for their computers. They'd been making their own chips for the iPhone and iPad for years now. So they decided to do this for their computers. And because they now make the hardware and the chip and the software, they've been able to actually do some very amazing things with speed and performance. And that's why I'm recommending this. The MacBook Air is their lowest and cheapest line. And right now I think this is not even a sale. You may even be able to get sales because of Black Friday and cyber whatever, $899 for educators for a very healthy machine. So if you're in the Mac world or you want to get into the Mac world, this is a very appealing price and a great product. I've had the MacBook Pro here for about 3 weeks and very impressed with its performance. Graphics and audio and video and just how quickly it opens and starts and no fan going. In fact, the MacBook Air doesn't even have a fan, so it's going to be whisper quiet for you. Just is, I think, a great choice for somebody, you know, looking to purchase a laptop. This would be good for college students, even high school students. Looking to purchase a laptop. It's very light and very, very durable. Apple makes some good hardware products. So we'll put a link in the show notes, but this is the MacBook Air, and they come in, there are very few choices right now. You can get the one with 8 gigabytes of RAM or 16, and for most people, even the 8, which is going to be that lowest price, that $899 for educators or students, is going to be a good, you know, good enough for almost everything. You can pay a little bit more and jump up the tree a little bit or jump up the chain a little bit, but really not necessary. So I think Apple did, it's getting rave reviews, and I think they've done a nice job with this latest release. And Highly recommend it.
Awesome. Just in time for Christmas shopping for those that need a new system this year.
So it is. Yeah,
good stuff.
Good choice. All right. It's enough of our picks. Why don't we move on, Sally, to our ministry resource this week? What do we got?
And this came from the Facebook group called Wells Educators During COVID-19 and Beyond. I think we talked about that group just on the last show when we were talking with Jason and Rachel about education resources. This Facebook group has been around, obviously, this year, and so many great discussions, people sharing resources. I've learned a lot in the process just following the group. But this time, Lori Elke, who teaches at St. Paul in Onalaska, Wisconsin, shared a video resource. And she said she was making some religious Christmas art videos. So she is an art teacher, I'm guessing, among other things, and a very talented artist. And she said, I know some of you have been using them, so glad they are helping. We are virtual right now, so I have to make them anyway. So she's making these art videos that she obviously shares with her students to do the art projects along with her. And in this case, she called it a Van Gogh nativity. So in the style of artist Vincent van Gogh, she made like a Starry Night kind of nativity scene. And she did it with washable markers. So there's some smear to the markers lines that she drew, and watercolors. And it is just stunningly very pretty artwork. And it looks so simple when you watch her short video and do it along with her. So if you're looking for some art projects, perhaps you want to do the Van Gogh nativity with your students or your homeschooled kids or your in place of a Sunday school craft, whatever it may be, definitely check out the video. We'll have it in our show notes. And also visit Lori's YouTube channel. She actually has, I want to say, like 790 plus art videos on her Elke Art channel. And they're kind of all over the place, but in particular, recently she's been posting some related to Christmas. So she has a kind of a mosaic drawing of baby Jesus that she shows you how to make. There's some around different books where you're drawing to go along with different books that students might be reading. She has just a wide variety of artwork that you could tap into and make use of her videos for a whole lot of different art lessons in your home or classroom. So definitely check out Elke Art on YouTube and enjoy the Van Gogh Nativity video. For this
great
week's
find.
Ministry
I think,
resource.
Yeah, I think COVID has brought us some blessings as well, and this is one of them, people doing this kind of thing and sharing what they've done. Helpful.
Definitely.
Community feedback.
All right, I'm going to jump over to a couple of windows I have open because recently Pastor Peter Hagen reached out with a couple of different podcasts that he's been listening to that he thought we might share with our listening community. One is called Top 5 Personal Productivity Books. It's from a website called beyondthetodolist.com. And if that sounds like it relates to our discussion topic of the day, then you would be correct, because one of the top 5 personal productivity books in the list that's discussed on this podcast is Atomic Habits. Imagine that. So Pastor Hagen said, in particular, there's a book mentioned called The Motivation Code, Discover the Hidden Forces That Drive Your Best Work. And in particular, he talks about that author, Todd Henry, and he says he writes a lot for what he calls creative professionals. The way he uses that term seems to have some substantial overlap with a lot of pastoral activity. So, Martin, you were saying Atomic Habits isn't specific to, religious professionals or whatever, but maybe this motivation code is one that you'd be interested in checking out for that very purpose. But definitely listen in to the podcast. I listened. It's only about 18 minutes long, and they talk about a lot of different productivity principles and give you links to where you can learn more and other resources that are mentioned during the podcast and things like that. So check it out. It'd be a good companion if you're reading Atomic Habits to maybe learn about some of these others that are out there and being discussed as well. And then,
excellent.
He even links to an interview with James Clear. So if you want to hear more from my good friend James Clear, you can listen to the Beyond the To-Do List podcast where they interviewed him. And then the second podcast Pastor Hagen sent was one from Tom Rainer, and it's on the post-quarantine church, what pastors are missing and the opportunities ahead. And so Pastor Hagen said, there should be some caveats. It's not that we agree with all the theology or their understanding of ministry, but this guy, Carrie Newhoff, I'm sorry, I think it's a girl, actually, Carrie Newhoff, interviewed Tom Rainer, and they have some interesting things to say about what church is going to look like when pandemic lifts, and whether we're just kind of surviving this to go back to normal, or whether we're actually seeing that there is going to be a new normal, even when we don't have the pandemic to worry about. The post-quarantine church is the topic, and actually Tom Rainer has written a book about that as well. So an interesting listen as well. I made it through this one, and he definitely gives you a lot of food for thought in this interview. So check that out.
Excellent.
Then we had an email from Joe Sears, who is a member at Salem in Greenfield, Wisconsin, and he was actually asking about software solutions for doing different screen switches during live streaming. So apparently his church is using YouTube for their live streaming, which is a great platform to be on, and they're kind of doing post-recording, where they're adding some different responses in and putting in, text of the hymns and things like that, post-production. But they'd like to be able to do that in real time with live streaming. He's seen other people that'll switch from the camera on the front of the church to maybe a PowerPoint slide or something of that nature. And he was wondering what kind of software options are out there to do that kind of thing. And, I am not an expert on this, but I do know that the OBS Open Broadcaster Software, which I believe we discussed on the last show that we did, it's one that will allow you to do that kind of thing, to set up different screens that you switch between in the software. And how to make that all work with YouTube, that's where I'm not fully up to speed. But I suggested maybe our Wells Tech listeners would be able to chime in and share some of their experience as well. Martin, you had a good suggestion for Joe also.
Yeah. In addition, just a final note on OBS, those kinds of tools, those software solutions kind of sit between your video feed and the YouTube stream. Mm-hmm. So it kind of acts as the camera that you give to YouTube, and whatever you switch to, whether that's a screen full of lyrics for a hymn or the actual video feed, or you can overlay like a lower third, all those kinds of things, pretty easy to do, and just kind of makes it a more fuller, richer experience. And like Joe mentioned, it can be a solution for the live feed itself. So that would be a definite option, I think. And there are others like it. But yeah, I also mentioned Stream My Worship, which is a website from a friend of the show, Philip Wells. And he offers his assistance, but he offers great resources there too for people looking to record and stream their church services. I think we had Philip on to talk about this a while back, and he's helped a number of churches, and he could help yours as well, or just take advantage of the resources that he has there for things just like this.
Yep, really.
That's
well done.
StreamMyWorship.com.
Very good. Glad you remembered to make mention of that. It slipped my mind, so that's good stuff. So I'm actually the contributor of this piece of community feedback. It's an article I came across titled, "Here's How to Enable Google Chrome's New Modern PDF Reader." So I use Chrome to look at a lot of PDF documents. It's actually my PDF reader of choice. And it's pretty simple and straightforward. I can download them. I can print them. Not a whole lot else. I can search maybe and I can zoom in to look at things closer. But now they have added to the capabilities and it has a little sidebar with the different pages of your PDF document. So you can jump to where you want to go if you want to use that display. It also allows you to do like side by side. So you can see two pages at one time in the viewer and probably some other features. The thing is, they snuck this in on us. It came with the most recent Chrome upgrade, but you have to go in and turn on that experience if you want to make use of it. So this article is pretty short, straightforward. It tells you how to go to the Chrome Flags menu and search for PDF Viewer Update and make it enabled. And then you get all those nice features the next time you start your Chrome browser. So if you're using Chrome for PDF reading, then I encourage you to go enable this new feature and you'll have lots of a lots better experience using their PDF reader that's been upgraded.
Yeah, there are so many PDFs out there that you get sent or you send, and you know, any operations manual from your toaster to your whatever. Is going to be in PDF. So this is it's good to improve that experience as much as possible. So
definitely.
Good find. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Let's move on to our Wells Now segment, where we talk about happenings, new things, interesting things going on in the Wells world. And one thing that I think has been on the minds of people off and on, as we, and certainly will be in 2021, is the new hymnal, the Christian worship hymnal that we are producing. And that committee has been hard at work for many years now, and they have produced a kind of a resource that I think you'll be interested in, especially if you are a pianist or organist and want a little sneak peek at the new hymns that are going to be in the hymnal. So 54 of the more than 200 new hymns that are going to be in the hymnal are available in I think it's PDF. So there's a nice digital resource. There's a whole blog post about why they did this and what things to look for. And then the PDF itself has some great stuff in it. First of all, a description of the process that they went through and some notes on some of the hymns. And then the full text or the lyrics and the notes for each of the hymns laid out as it will appear in the new hymnal. So if you are of a mind, go to our show notes and find that link or go to wells.net. It's right there on the homepage as well. But some really good free resources if you want to. There's some good Christmas hymns in here that you may want to take a look at and play around with. So that's what's happening in Wells.
Getting exciting. It won't be long before we'll have those new hymnals.
It won't be long, exactly. But you can experience some of that now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to about do it, Sally. We already mentioned that in our next show, we're going to finish up with the fourth law of Atomic Habits. But we also have a special guest joining us. Tell us a little bit about him.
Right. We are going to be talking to Mike Tracy, who has a background in cybersecurity and recently attended a conference and has some new information to share with us about cybersecurity training for schools and why you'd want to get your students up to speed on cybersecurity. So looking forward to talking to Mike soon.
Very timely topic as well.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you to everybody listening. We appreciate your patronage, your listening ears. Please share the word that this exists and come back next time for another episode of the Wells Tech Podcast. Bye-bye, everybody.